name's Ian McShane. I'm VP of Strategy here at Arctic Wolf, and welcome to the Challenge Accepted podcast, the Hot Take Coffee Break Edition, where we talk about all things security.
And hi, I'm Adam Mare, CISO of Arctic Wolf. So whether you're a beginner or an experienced security professional, we hope you'll join us in our Hot Take Coffee Break Edition as we talk about some of the latest news and things that we're reacting to in the security world.
Let's get into it.
Anyway, what do we want to talk about today?
Yeah, so I saw you added a bunch of things. I've been really slack and only added one thing, really. I don't know if there's anything interesting to say about Black Hat, but I figured that's going to be the next thing on the agenda for most folks.
Yeah, probably nothing. So are you gone?
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah. I see you're speaking, okay. Aren't you?
Yeah, I'm doing
the same booth thing.
Doing the speaking thing. I did something different this time, but yeah, the stuff that I put up to talk about is, so, I mean, the big thing right now is the Microsoft email breach. And now they just announced that they're going to open up this logging to
the lower licenses. I saw CISA talking about that. Yeah.
And it's about time, because I do remember, you know, that back in the day. So that's really good.
That's a good place to start. I think that's a great place to start, like talking about the logging, because one of the things I've complained about Microsoft about. One thing that's annoyed me about Microsoft for years, almost since they started having security controls, is that it felt like nothing was secure by default. Like you had to jump through hoops to get security enabled. And now, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I can understand people didn't know what they were doing and you probably leave things turned off for the sake of not screwing up someone's environment. But it feels like there are so many hoops to go through to get these things turned on. And so does this mean that the logging is going to be available to everyone by default, or are they going to have to go and, I'm assuming they don't have to upgrade to bloody E5 or something, but.
Yeah, so my history with this is, you know, as an FBI agent, as an investigator, we would go into companies that had been breached and they were just unaware that they didn't have the logging on. Now, most of these were, you know, small, medium businesses, some maybe smaller enterprises. And they were just unaware that they didn't have the logging they should have. And they figured they should have it. But at least at the time, Microsoft was saving 30 to 90 days for them so that they could then come and buy it, which seemed a bit exploitative to me.
Yeah. You've been breached. Oh, you need to buy some more storage from us to do that investigation.
You know, putting my kindness hat on, I guess you can also see it as like, hey, at least we stored it for you. At least you can buy it. It wasn't just turned off because you elected not to buy this product that does cost us money to deliver. So I'm trying not to be too cruel about it, but 100%, I believe for a very, very long time that security, basic security features should not be a, you know, selling point. It should not be an additional fee. It should just be part of it. And we're talking SSO, talking MFA, all of that. But there are many companies still today. I mean, there's that, you know, website of shame. I forget what it is, but there is one that says, you know, if they charge for MFA. Mm-hmm. So I believe that. I think it's a little murkier when it comes to logging, because that is costing, the storage of the logging is costing the provider something. I just think a basic level of logging should be included no matter what license. It should just be part of it. And if we got to put it in the prices, put it in the price, whatever it is. But I really do like to see, as a result of some public shaming, apparently, but I really do like to see that Microsoft is now going to put this logging into their lower, you know, E3, whatever. I mean, you need a PhD licensing, but.
Good God. Yeah. You're definitely right. I think there's elements of gatekeeping still. And one of the things, I mean, crikey, like with my capitalist hat on, like just thinking about how we sell products at Arctic Wolf and how other security vendors sell products. You have things that you charge for when they are cutting edge. They eventually become commodity, right? They end up being just part of what you do. And that's one of the things I'm yet to see Microsoft do with security is take their security controls and just move them downstream. Like instead of moving, you know, instead of creating E7, for example, you know, they move some of the stuff out of E5 into E3 as it becomes more mature. Things like, and actually, do you know what? I haven't looked at the E3 and E5 entitlements for a long time, but the things you said like SSO and all of those things and some of the more cloud-based Azure AD or whatever they're calling it now, because they just changed the name. But the configuration things in there that aren't available unless you upgrade to E5, you know, it feels like there's always been a level of gatekeeping that's, I don't know, it's characteristic of some security vendors, but I think it feels like Microsoft should almost know better or do better.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of cutting edge, I would just hope that companies like Microsoft, who is very good at security and has always been on the bleeding edge of it, would, mm-hmm. you know, offer some of these things as basic packages for their customers to allow them mm-hmm. to have, you know, just the minimum level of security, which includes logging, SSO.
Good enough security. Yeah, exactly.
Although the fact that it came up in this instance, so to be clear, the specific issue we're talking about was the breach of, you know, the non-classified Microsoft email system.
I was going to ask if it related to that certificate credential stealing.
Correct. I think that is the specific issue. Well, that's where like the public shaming came in, because I'm assuming, and I don't have the specific details, but from what I've read in the articles that mm-hmm. I've seen, apparently it looks like, I don't know what part of the government or the department didn't have the logging paid for. Huh. So they had to ask for it and get it and then use it. And then it kind of came up, well, why didn't they have it? Well, they didn't have the more mm-hmm. license. So therefore they weren't able to dig into it.
Is that the Storm 0558 breach, or is that a separate one?
Correct.
It's the same one.
And this is the one where they haven't released all the detail.
Yeah, so I hadn't put two and two together. I saw that CISA, I'm pretty sure I saw CISA's announcement of the logging stuff. And then obviously reading the Storm and the OWA, so the Exchange Online breach, I hadn't put two and two together to think that they were related, actually.
Yeah, that's what I believe they are.
An interesting one, right? It's like they only discovered that reading the, and again, you know, kudos to Microsoft Security Response for the detailed write-up, but it seems like they only discovered it when a savvy customer who actually goes through the logs of Exchange Online realized that there was some fishy activity happening that shouldn't have been happening in their environment.
Yeah, and again, we don't have all the details. It is an ongoing investigation, and it does look like this was, you know, kind of a step up in the level of sophistication coming out of, you know, who they're alleging did this. Yeah. And with the attack, it just, yeah, they got in, and then some savvy person and one of the government agencies, I believe it was the U.S. State Department, noticed it.
It was the State Department. When I was reading the blog post Microsoft put out, it made it sound like it was, I'm sure they called it a customer, unless I'm getting my wires crossed and there was another similar incident, which, you know, is perfectly possible. But it seems like it's the same one, like acquiring the credentials to be able to sign tokens and basically spoof credentials to access Exchange Online, right?
Because yeah, exactly.
What was interesting to me out of that was, like, I mean, how many organizations would actually be proactively going through their logs? I mean, you know, I'm sure there are some that have threat hunting, but all of the stuff I've read about this particular incident, it sounds like the adversary was doing the usual stealthy hide in plain sight by acting like normal users. And so, you know, it makes it even harder to threat hunt. So, like, the fact that Microsoft didn't find it until a customer found it, like, I'm curious. And maybe it'll be a Black Hat or a DEF CON or a B-Sides talk at some point, but that whichever company it was that discovered it, like, what were they hunting for? How did they notice it? What was their root cause analysis?
Yeah, I really want to find out the whole story. So hopefully it'll come out at some point. You know, what was the specific things the attacker did? What were the specific things the threat hunter did to find it? And then the response, because this is high level stuff. It's right around the time that, you know, the United States Secretary of State Blinken was headed to China.
In China, yeah.
And it looked like they were specifically reading the emails of the Commerce Secretary, Gina Raimondo, looking at her emails. So geopolitics and espionage and all that. Yeah,
looking to get an upper hand in trade negotiations or something, or
economic sanctions and stuff.
Oh yeah, sure.
Of countries all the time, you know, to each other. You know, they want to understand what's going on behind the scenes. So, anyway, that was a really interesting one. But I think this result of like changing the level of logging is an interesting result from that.
Yeah. Then, like, talking about breaches, you'd put a note here about the SolarWinds getting a SEC notice. And so just when I thought I'd never have to hear the words SolarWinds and breach in the same sentence again, it sounds like this is doing the rounds.
Yeah, and it's not exactly clear what's happening here, but there has been notice filed. I think this just goes to, I mean, these are okay, to get a little wonky with this, these are called Wells notices, and they're sent because they notify the recipients that there's a possible intent to bring charges against them. And, you know, the SEC only does this when a corporation is found, you know, being in violation of something for this Securities and Exchange Commission, something that they do. So it could be, you know, substantive misrepresentations of various things. I think what strikes this for me, you know, being a CISO, is we as an industry, you know, as a world community, we're still trying to figure out how to hold people accountable and in what way to hold them accountable. And who it should be, and what is the standard of it's not always used in this language, but the standard of due care, right? Like, what is the reasonable amount of things that someone should do to protect the information? And then, really important, what is a reasonable amount of clarity and transparency around disclosures? And the problem is that isn't solidified. It's not like we have thousands of years of accounting, like with CFOs. And so we know exactly what they should be doing and what they should be saying to people and what they should be disclosing. We don't have that in security. And
that's right.
Should it be the CISO or the CEO or the board? And, you know, new rules are coming out. There's some new rules coming out of the US from the White House. So all of this makes it a very, you know, nervous place to be a CISO, because you know, I don't know any CISO that's out there that's willfully not trying to do their best to protect their organization. Oftentimes they're just loggerheads with the board or with others trying to get budget and people.
Yeah. How do you go to the SEC and say, how do you go back to the SEC and say, yeah, sorry, I tried, but we didn't have enough money to do it. Microsoft charged too much for a single sign-on. Like, that's not much of a defense, but I mean, the things that were interesting to me in here were just the words the SEC are using, like failure to disclose material information, or failing to disclose the gravity of an incident, or failing to do so in a timely manner. They're all really interesting things when it comes to crisis comms and all of the breaches you hear about. It's like, it took them too long to admit to it. There's still stuff going on in the UK where companies have appeared on Klopp, big organizations have appeared on, you know, Klopp's blog post, or, you know, some other adversary's blog post, and saying, yeah, we've ransomed this company, and the company's going, yeah, it's an IT incident, you know, we're still investigating, we don't have the information to share, I guess. But when the SEC is starting to say that failure to disclosing the gravity is, you know, essentially breaking whatever rules and regulations it is that the, you know, the stock market and the SEC govern, that's got to be pretty scary for a CISO to be tagged with that, when it's arguably it's not even your decision at this point, is it?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, casting a shadow over all those comments I just said is the whole issue with Uber and Joseph Sullivan and what happened to him. And, you know, the cover up is always worse than the crime, that kind of thing. And I think that's what is being, you know, signaled here, is that what they're talking about is you've got to be really clear on how big a breach is, what happened. And if you don't, because that information can affect the market, right? And if you don't, if you're not clear on that information, then we're going to come after you, really saying, like, you can't just brush these under the rug anymore. You've got to come clear. The issue that I think, you know, so the security leadership community is having is, like, who makes that decision is not, like, totally up to the CISO. And what do you have to say? What are the requirements? Because there are privacy requirements kind of coming out of GDPR and CCPA and those requirements. There are regulatory requirements, but what do you have to do for the market isn't exactly clear. So we're still figuring that out. But in the meantime, figuring that out, we're sending notices to people that we're bringing charges against them for not doing what we're not clear on what should be done. I'm not trying to excuse this at all. I know that these folks are doing their best. I just, it's just a cause for concern. And I think figure it out and get really clear on what people to do. And then guess what? All of us security leaders can hold the line And when we're in those board meetings or those decision meetings or crisis communications, mm-hmm. we can say, no, this is what's required. This is what we're going
to
do.
There needs to be a standard. Someone needs to define a standard. And, you know, like you said, we haven't got thousands of years of accounting background to come up with a adopted standard, let alone a governed standard or a dictated standard, or whatever you want to call it. And it reminds me, it's similar in, well, firstly, of course, it's just another reason to feel sorry for your local CISO. So go and hug your CISO if you see one. But it kind of, there's some interesting parallels with the SEC trying to do the right thing, which is what I think they're doing. It's not a witch hunt. It's not a chase. It's not a ridiculous government policy driven thing. They're trying to do the right thing. They're just, you know, going about it the wrong way, maybe, or it's just hard to adopt. But I compare that to.
Yeah, I don't know that there's a right way, just to interject in there a little
exactly.
bit. Like, once again, I believe in the good intentions of all the folks here in this, and I don't know, maybe somebody's trying to cover something up, but it really does seem like the SEC is trying to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Most CISOs, certainly ones I know and talk to, are always trying to do the right thing. They want to be transparent. Mm-hmm. So it's just a difficult situation, but continue.
I agree. But then I was reading just before this today that, and try and keep my political bias on one side here, but the ridiculousness of the UK government has gathered more steam today when they're trying to force companies like Apple and Facebook with WhatsApp and Signal to sign up to this latest ridiculous changes to privacy. So there's been this ongoing thing for a while in the UK where the UK government, like some others, I suppose, is trying to avoid encryption in a way that gives them the chance to, you know, or gives law enforcement the chance to read messages, get data when they need to. But the one they announced today is basically saying that a software vendor that uses security has to bend to the will of the Home Office, which involves removing security when they're told, not being able to have any kind of protest or review period, but they actually have to do it, which Apple turned around today and said, well, if that's the case, we'll just turn off iMessage and FaceTime in the UK because we're not going to move away from that kind of encryption. So on one hand, you know, it seems like the SEC are at least looking in the right direction and trying to do the right thing. And then on the other hand, you see some of these government entities that may be undereducated or going after the wrong goal and just trying to, you know, take a hammer to a housefly.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think we're going through a period where we are getting more folks in government that understand.
In the US, definitely.
Yeah, in the US for sure. That understand not mm-hmm. just security better, but technology and how it actually works.
Yeah.
Now, I still don't think it's necessarily folks in power. I think the average age of an elected official in the U.S. is 63 years old.
I was going to say, let's be careful not to be too ageist, but generally, that's my opinion, is that that's half of the problem.
but a lot of the folks that work for them, a lot of folks in positions,
sure.
and let's be honest, a lot of, you know, people in their 60s do understand technology. So I do think it's getting better, at least in the U.S. from what I see, as far as like the questions being asked when they, you know, when they bring these people out to testify in front of Congress, the questions are getting better. I think we're trending in a better direction, but there's a lot to be worked out here. And yeah, certainly the old we need a backdoor to your encryption argument is just, well, then it's not encryption, right?
Exactly. So yeah, it's ridiculous.
There's still some, and I get, trust me, I was in the FBI. I understand. you want to see the communications of criminals that are doing very, very bad things to interdict. Mm-hmm. But you've got to balance that against security, and it's an interesting thing. But I just love it when they try to. I just want a backdoor in your encryption. Well, then it's not encryption anymore.
Exactly. Oh man, that's a good segue into something else that's quite near and dear to my heart. Is phrases that come out in crisis comms, like, you know, advanced. It's such an advanced attack. There was nothing we could do about it, or, you know, the common misconception that every nation state adversary is always using, you know, 0 days and is impossible to block them, is this one story from maybe a week ago. And, you know, it's unsurprisingly in the realm of Ukraine and Russia, where it seems like someone in, I guess, APT-29 or Cozy Bear, as researchers from Palo Alto put it, intercepted someone trying to sell their car and then used that the Word document as a way to try and fish some of the embassy people.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, we do talk about the 0 days and all the scary stuff and the Pegasus and they're impressive and they're interesting to read about and sometimes amazing, right?
Yeah.
But most attacks are successful with it's just easy. Like yeah. the basics, uh-huh. credentials and unpatched stuff. And I'm selling a 5 Series BMW and here's a catalog of pictures. Like go ahead so and good. Download that. Boom, it executes a macro and Bob's your uncle. I've pwned you. Yeah, that stuff works.
It's just so funny. Like I'd read it on, I don't know, a news website, but it didn't pop up in the usual cybersecurity news things because I guess it's not interesting enough when someone's sending a Word document trying to sell a BMW for 7,000 euros or whatever it was. It just doesn't sound as interesting as someone intercepting a supply chain or, you know, this crazy, you know, chain of 0 days that was in, you know, previously undisclosed vulnerabilities.
Yeah, I mean,
it just goes to show it doesn't always have to be the cutting edge technology to get this stuff done. And all of these things, you know, I don't want to say it's easy for organizations to prevent everything, but there are certainly plenty of low hanging fruit that can move someone's security posture forward without having to worry necessarily about the craziest examples of, you know, a nation state trying to access your open S3 bucket.
Yeah, and I mean, they're going to use any and all methods, right? Especially if they really are after something. But, you know, I have, you know, friends that work in the, you know, hacker for hire business, right? So mm-hmm. they do penetration tests for companies. And oftentimes they'll come in when they're doing a bid and they say, okay, well, we won't do a phishing attack till the end. We want to try all the technical means first because mm-hmm. that's the hard stuff. And we may or may not. But we know this will work. So if we do that first and we get in, then we got them through phishing. That doesn't tell us anything because we know that'll work. It's just funny that, you know, there's an ad, right? It's one way to do it, but we know phishing will work. So it just shows that like the bread and butter basics is still where we need to put a lot of our focus from a lot of our organizations is on that, you know, so that we end the days of blaming the intern for not carrying out their admin password or, you know, or the high level exec for clicking on the wrong link and things like that. We still need to work on these basics, get them solved and buttoned up because they'll still be used by everyone to include nation state adversaries. And they're going to use the advanced stuff, but you know, when the easy stuff works for what you're trying to do,
yeah,
you're going to go with the easy stuff because it works.
One of the good things, and so one of the reasons I bookmarked this news report actually is because I get asked a lot by journalists, reporters, customers, you know, what should I be doing about nation state? How worried should I be about Russia and Ukraine or China, North Korea, whomever? And this is going to be a great one to say, you know, you should focus on, you know, phishing and end user education because, you know, they're going to use these kind of things as well.
Yeah, I do like to elevate people's visibility to say, hey, you may not think that you're a target, but you got to think about your customers because you could be a vector into someone that they're interested in. So there are a lot of companies that don't realize that they may be in the crosshairs of a nation state or some actors supported by a nation state.
Yep.
That being said, the stuff they should probably be working on to secure themselves is no different than what they should be working on anyway, because it's probably the basics. It's probably turning on MFA or protecting credentials or having a better patch management, vulnerability management program. So it really is and a detection program, right? So it really is still those basics. But it does help maybe raise a sense of urgency, acquire some more budget to be able to do it, to tell them that, hey, you may not be the target, but your customers might be. And you need to be aware of that because you may not know that, you know, this nation state is after stealing the intellectual property of this customer of yours that you don't think has anything to do with national security, but they're on the bleeding edge of some odd thing. And that's what this adversary or this economic espionage target, you know, that's what they want.
Yeah, it brings me back to one of my favorite phrases, which is that you're either going to be the target or the transport at some point.
Yeah. Target or the vector, it's going to be one or the other.
There you go.
So, I do like to highlight that for folks. But again, it's the basics. So.
Yep, sure is. That's all I got this week.
Yeah, I think we have some good stuff in there.
Yeah, well, it was fun chatting with you again, Adam. Appreciate it. Assuming you are our CISO next time, I look forward to the next one of these.
Yeah, assuming I don't get notified by the SEC for some reason. No, there's no reason.
I'll get my tiny violins out for all the CISOs out there. Hold on.
Yeah, exactly. All those CISOs. But hey, they're under a lot of pressure. They are. I will say that.
Do you know what? A question I got asked this week, actually, was apparently there's been a study that says being a CISO removes 2 or 3 years from the average CISO's life expectancy. And I have questions about this. So number one is like, how many people are they interviewing that have sadly passed that they are using to benchmark those 2 to 3 years? Like, how are they quantifying that? And number two is like, you don't seem to have aged that much since you joined Arctic Wolf. So, you know, is it really that stressful?
Yeah, I think it's a debate on whether my teenagers or the job takes more years from my life. Yeah. No, I love the family. Yeah. No, it's it is a good question, because the amount of stress that CISOs are under. I mean, the surveys of them are really interesting, and that may be something we can, you know, do a full episode on sometime, because mm-hmm. it's a really interesting topic. I would like to see the actuary tables that they're looking at to understand, exactly. to make some sort of claim that it's taken 2 or 3 years off your life. Like, how do we know that? But I do think talking about stress and where the stress comes from, and we alluded to some of that earlier today, talking about the uncertainty around what the obligations are and the expectations mm-hmm. are, and the fact that, you know, if a breach happens, you're probably going to get axed, or it's very likely, you know, unless you're really new in your tenure or you're very, very supported. I mean, that happens a lot, right? So I think, and so much of whether or not you get breached is out of your direct control, right? Again, to compare to like a CFO, you don't have all the accounting that you can account for
exactly.
at your fingertips and make sure it's done. Security is everywhere. I mean, everyone has an email account. Everybody can click on things. It's just this big, huge, complex problem, and it's all on your shoulders. So yeah, I get what they're saying. These are
you actually made me feel sorry for you there. It's all on your shoulders.
Yeah, let's play those violins. No, but I think it's an interesting topic that I do want to dig into. Yeah. So
yeah. All right, cool. I think
we need to do an outro of some kind, or is that probably good enough?
I think it's good enough.